Extraordinary Moms podcast. I'm Jessica Dahlquist, your host, and I'm so glad you're with us for another episode. Usually on Tuesdays, I interview a mom who is extraordinary. She tells her story and the lessons she's learned along her journey of motherhood, and then we all have wonderful, inspiring takeaways, and it's just awesome. But today we have a little bit different episode for you. Every month or so, I'm going to do a book club episode. I know as a mom, or just as a busy person in general, you may not have a lot of time to read. I know it's been a goal of mine to read more this year, but it's hard to get that book in my hands when my hands are busy so much of the time. So what I decided to do was to read a book along with one of my friends, and it's a book that might be a parenting book or a self-improvement book. But regardless, it's a book that might be interesting to you, that you might want to read, that might be piled up on your bookshelf right this second. But I'll read it for you, and then we'll discuss it in an episode. We'll hit the main points and discuss our takeaways just like a regular book club. And then that way, by the end of the episode, you can feel like you read a book. It's awesome. So today's book, in honor of Valentine's Day, is The Five Love Languages of Children by Gary Chapman and Ross Campbell. And in this book, we'll talk about the best ways to really fill your child's love tank and express love to them in the most effective ways for their own personal self. And as we'll see, every child is very different in how they want to receive love and feel our love. So it's going to be a really interesting conversation with my good friend, Stephanie Marston, who's my go-to person to talk about all things motherhood. So I really hope you enjoy our conversation about the five love languages of children. All right, so like I was telling you before, we are going to have our very first book club, and as I find books that I think might be meaningful to all the moms out there, books that I come across that I think, moms might really benefit from this content, but might not have the time right this second to get through the whole book, this is your opportunity. I am going to read the book for you, and then I'm going to tell you everything you need to know, and you can feel like you read the book by the end. So discussing the book with me today is my really good friend, Stephanie Marston, who I just think is a really extraordinary mom, and she read the same book as I did, which this month is The Five Love Languages of Children by Gary Chapman and Ross Campbell. You might also recognize this title. There's The Five Love Languages for Marriage, which applies to, obviously, marriages and adults. So, hi, Stephanie.
Hello, how are you?
Good. Stephanie, you are in San Diego right now. Go ahead and just give a little background on yourself for the listeners.
Okay, well, I am Stephanie Marston. I have four children. The oldest is 11, and then I have a little boy who's turning 9 tomorrow, and a little boy who's 6, and a little girl who's 3, and they are my life right now, obviously. But prior to having children, I worked in the schools, in the elementary schools. I was a school psychologist, and that has always been my passion. I knew that I wanted to do that from the time I was in high school on. I love studying children and the ways that, you know, the things that make them tick and the things that I can do better to help them to grow healthy and emotionally stable. And so anyway, I thought this idea was wonderful to be able to read these parenting books that have so many great ideas and to be able to discuss this on your podcast. So anyway, I'm really happy to be here.
Absolutely. And Stephanie, you're one of my go-tos for when I have a parenting question or we swap book ideas, and we're always discussing books anyway. So I thought you were a natural choice for covering this with me.
We do love to talk about books and ideas. So
yes,
true.
We do. So I think it's going to be a great conversation, and hopefully by the end of this, they'll feel like, well, now I feel like I read the book and I didn't even have to lift a finger. So that
is. And the good thing about this book is, I mean, it isn't super complicated. So it's true. The ideas are, we probably could communicate the ideas in a half hour.
Yes,
you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we'll share some like personal experiences having to do with what we thought about the book and how it relates to ourselves. But these are universal principles that regardless of how old your children are, what types of children you have, you know, all of that, it's definitely universal, and you'll definitely be able to put yourself in our shoes as we're going through the material. The Five Love Languages of Children by Gary Chapman and Ross Campbell, the basic premise is that children and people in general receive love and give love in different ways. I'm going to read a quote from page 17 that says, "In raising children, everything depends on the love relationship between parent and child. Nothing works well if a child's love needs are not met. Only the child who feels genuinely loved and cared for can do her best. You may truly love your child, but unless she feels it, unless you speak the love language that communicates to her your love, she will not feel loved." I thought that was so huge. So what they're saying is, they're setting the stage for this whole book, is that children have a primary way or two of receiving love, and unless we are meeting that exact need for that particular child, we may really love them deeply, but they may not feel it. Did that really shock you, Stephanie?
That, I'm laughing in my head because when I'm reading a book, sometimes I take a picture of paragraphs or things that really stuck out to me. Yeah. And I took a picture of that paragraph. Right? Just,
yes.
So I think that's really funny. We didn't discuss this beforehand, but yes. It just struck me so deeply that every, you know, the discipline, the activities after school, all the things that we're doing to try and contribute to their lives and help them to feel, you know, and do their best, it means nothing if we aren't first establishing that love connection. And he talks a lot about unconditional love. They need to know that they are loved. And then you can work with the discipline. Then you can work with the teaching and the guiding and all of that sort of thing.
Yep. And exactly what I found was that across the board with my kids, I give them love and show them love mostly based on how I want to receive it, what my love language is. Not necessarily what their love language is, but what my love language is. And that's good, and you want to show love in all different ways, but when it comes to really boosting them up and filling up their love tank, it has to come in that primary form for them to really feel it. So let me go ahead and tell you what the five love languages are, and then we'll get talking about them specifically. The first one is physical touch. The second one is words of affirmation. Third, quality time. Fourth, gifts. And five, acts of service. And some of these overlap, and so that's where it gets a little bit muddy. But the point is that kids need all different types of love, but there should be a primary one or maybe two that really resonate with you as you're reflecting upon your individual child. How do they receive love or need to receive love to most, you know, be strongly
connected.
Exactly.
So, and I like something that the author says in here that I didn't think about, but he says the easiest way for a parent is probably physical touch and words of affirmation. It doesn't take much sacrifice on our part, and it's just kind of a natural thing to do. But as the children grow, and I know that works a lot with little kids, but I've noticed with my 11-year-old in particular that she doesn't want to be hugged as much, but that, like you said, your primary love language. Well, for me, hugging my kids, that's huge. Well, that doesn't work anymore for her. So it's just interesting to really dive down into the different elements of these love languages and work harder as they grow.
Exactly. And as we're talking about physical touch, they also mentioned that just because your child's going through a phase where they don't want to be touched as much, or they're in that teenage years and they're embarrassed by you and they shrug you off. And if their primary love language is still physical touch, even when they kind of shrug you off and act resistant, that's still their primary form of filling their love tank. And so it's still our responsibility to find ways to love them in that way. It's just going to look different, and we have to be mindful of that.
That's right. You know, something as easy as just scratching their neck or their back or something, you know, you don't give them this humongous hug like you used to, but you can just put your arm around them or little things like that.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And I thought for sure for my boys that physical touch was theirs because they love wrestling. And they're just like an in-your-face. They love wrestling with their dad. But really, as we'll continue talking, when I thought about my 5-year-old, he really just craves quality time. Because just because he loves wrestling with his dad, that to him is his dad spending time with him. And what he craves from me is me spending time with him doing something else. And so what it boils down to is quality time is still his love language, even though physical touch, it manifests itself in physical touch. That's why it gets a little bit confusing.
Yes. Well, and the book does a good job of explaining that you really need to capitalize on all five love languages.
Yes.
It's just that it's nice to keep this in mind and, you know, execute those ideas the most, maybe.
Yes, exactly. So I think physical touch is the most basic. If your child really longs for that touch connection, hugging, kissing, hand on the shoulder, rubbing their back, wrestling if that's what they need, but even just like putting your hand on them when you're talking to them and just making that connection can definitely fill
that. Well, and I think that for those of you who do end up buying this book or getting mm-hmm. it from the library, one thing I loved about it was at the end of each chapter, they have a big list of ideas for the, so you may be reading from that list right now, but you know, it just gives you some thoughts on how to show more physical touch in your day with your child.
Right. So even if you don't have a chance to read through the entire book, just at the end of each chapter, those pages of ideas can really help focus you in on, okay, if I really think I know where my child's at, this is a list I can work from.
Yes.
Absolutely. Okay, the next one, first, physical touch. Second, words of affirmation. Positive words that boost. And what really stuck out to me in this chapter is that as much as our positive words can build up our children, our negative words or our tone can tear them down immeasurably. That hit me to the core. Tell me what you thought when you read that.
Well, I just thought that was an interesting concept. He says not only do our children have a love language, but they also have, you know, it's the opposite of that will affect them so deeply.
Yes.
If words of affirmation are their love language, then the negativity will be terrible. Or if quality time is their love language, then you sending them to a timeout and, you know, withdrawing yourself or withdrawing eye contact, whatever it may be, that's going to hurt them ever so much.
Yes.
So anyway, it's just an interesting idea.
I thought that was so helpful because that can, because so many times when we want to discipline our children, we are just, there's so many different options, but yet so many of those options that you may try to implement, timeouts, you know, taking away the toy, talking it out, whatever, it's ineffective and you're not sure why it's ineffective, but this really points in the right direction of, okay, what is their currency? And you don't want to do something to discipline them that is going to harm their self-esteem or their question about your love connection with them.
Yes, exactly.
That just breaks my heart.
I know. It really is. It's a really big idea to embrace, you know?
Yes. And it's more than just about the words. It's the tone, the mood, the facial expression, your physical closeness. And sometimes, I mean, I hate to admit this, but sometimes I feel like when I'm talking to my kids and I'm thinking about something else, I kind of just say the words that they need to hear, but without emotion, without any type of like real connection, eye contact. And it's like, why am I shortchanging them if that's something that they crave? Why am I shortchanging them that ability to connect? Oh, that's awesome. Oh, you did such a good job. Like, how believable is that?
I know, like, it's true.
Why don't I just, like, if I'm going to take the time to say those words, why don't I give myself over to those words when I talk to them?
Well, yeah, it's just kind of about being mindful in the moment, something that I constantly struggle with in parenting. I think we all do. You know, you have so many tasks to accomplish, but realizing, and I'm sure you've read this too, that children need a good conversation with you every day. Children need, you know, to be able to trust that when they come to you. I have this quote on my fridge. It says, listening is so much like loving, it's hard to tell the difference.
Mm.
And I remind myself that every day. I need to stop. You know, I'm washing the dishes. Just stop and look at them when they're talking to me and get on their level and say back important things that, you know, really mean something instead of like, they know that you're not really listening.
Yes.
And the words are important, especially to those children where that is their love language. That is so important to them.
Yes. And even if it's not their primary love language, you're teaching them how to communicate. And if you model apathy and disconnect and not making eye contact and never being really excited or anything like that, that is what you're going to get from them. So as we're parenting, we need to think about what our children are seeing from us. And is that the type of behavior and conversation and communication and the respect level that we want them giving other people?
Right.
You know, that can be humbling sometimes because there are little mirrors. And I mean, I'm sure you've been there, Stephanie, where you're like, oh, man, that's embarrassing what they're doing, but that is so me.
Oh, yeah. I hate that feeling when Evelyn snaps at one of her little brothers, like, stop. And then I see myself in that, you know?
Yes, yes. Like, don't point your finger at him. But then you're like, oh, wait, I just did that. And
yeah.
But it's good, too, because, I mean, we're not perfect. And so it's fine to recognize the areas where, oh, man, I didn't do that so well. Because it's the extraordinary moms that are reflective. Not that they're perfect, but they recognize areas where, oh, that's not what I want to continue doing going forward. I didn't like how that came out. We can apologize to our children. We can bring it to their attention. You know what? Mom shouldn't have yelled at you like that. I'm going to really try hard the next time I get frustrated to not do that.
We
need to humble ourselves.
It's true. And I know you want to move on to the next love language, but I want to tell you a funny story about words of affirmation. My 11-year-old, she's more like a 14-year-old. She's very
she
mature.
Is. She is.
And I've been talking so much about this book, and she knows Jessica really well, so she knows what's happening. And we discovered that her love language is not words of affirmation, but yet I still constantly, you know, give her those props just because that's who I am, and I always say words of affirmation. Well, the other day I, you know, gave her some sort of little prop like, wow, that was really well done, honey. I'm really proud of you. And mom, that's not my love language. That's what she said back. But it was funny because I realized with her, she really does see that as patronizing and doesn't really care too much about the words of affirmation. But what she loves, and the book gives this idea, is little notes to her about the things that I love about her. And so that's also words of affirmation, little notes that you leave for her. So that just struck me. Well, she may think these things I'm saying to her are, you know, nonsense because I'm her mom. And of course I believe these things about her, but the little notes that I leave in her room, she treasures them and she keeps them and stores them. And so I can communicate my love to her through that.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a good idea.
I think that's a great idea. Absolutely. So when you talked with Evelyn about the context of this book and everything, how did you explain it? Or do you think we should discuss this with our children?
Well, I think so, especially, you know, the book does talk about teenagers, how they might try to manipulate you by saying, my love language is gifts. Now give me a, you know,
me a
or Xbox or something.
Yeah.
But, I can see that with Evelyn because she also, her love language genuinely is gifts, but also, acts of service.
Mm-hmm.
And, but I do. I think it's neat. I talked with my 6-year-old and my 8-year-old and my 11-year-old and figured out their love languages. And it was really cool because I told them about my love language. And guys, if you want to know, for me, giving me the hugest hug, coming up and, you know, doing the dishes without being asked, that's service. And that is my love language. Mm-hmm. And I love it. And so they have been in tune with it. And I think that I know now exactly what makes them tick as well. And so, you know, if I'm scratching their back, I know you love to have your back scratched, you know, just things like that. We're just all on board kind of with the idea.
Yeah. I think helping children to understand that we need to be intentional with what we're doing towards other people. And if we know that this is something that somebody else likes, we should go out of our way to do it for them. And that's great for them to be aware of that they're able to love somebody in a way that is most meaningful to them.
Well, and how cool is it that they now know for future reference for not only just what makes them tick, but how, oh, well, I want to show someone I love them. I know there's 5 ways. I just think it's a great idea for them to embrace at a young age.
Yes, and that's another reason that you don't only want to show love in one way is because as they're encountering different people, siblings, parents, roommates, whatever, down the road, you know, they need to be able to express the love in all different types of ways according to those specific needs.
Yeah.
So the next love language is quality time. And like I said before, I got quality time can get misconstrued with a lot of different things like physical touch or acts of service. Because when you're serving somebody, you're also spending time with them a lot of times. And so I think those can get kind of muddled. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, definitely. I thought for sure that my 8-year-old, his love language was quality time, but when I did the test, service stood out so much higher, and I realized, wait a second, he actually really, you know, I'm with him during the service, but he notices that, and that means so much to him that I am, you know, for whatever it is, baking something together with him, not just sitting there talking to him. You know, he notices that I've planned for his friends to come over, and I've, you know, we set up a Nerf gun thing, and that's service, but it's also quality time because we're working together to plan an event.
Yeah, mine is acts of service. Like, I find myself always being really responsive and feeling really loved when my husband or my kids serve me, but it also requires their time. So I was confused on myself at first on whether it was quality time or service, but
And I wanted to put in a little plug about quality time. I think that most moms feel a lot of guilt whenever we hear the word quality time because it's just like, wow. I mean, I remember I read, I can't remember what book it was, How to Help Your Kids Stop Whining, something like that. Yeah. And in there, it just talked about how important it is to give each child 20 minutes a day of quality time, just one-on-one time, and how that can literally make the difference, you know, night and day difference with them. And I remember being a school psychologist, and when a kid was acting up and we were writing an intervention plan for them, that was, I was trained to help those families realize, look, is there a reason this child is acting out like this? Could it be that he needs a little bit of more attention at home, some more quality time? That was my first go-to. It always was. And I know it was guilt-inducing, but that is the answer a lot of times, that they need more one-on-one time with their parent. Yes. So it produces a lot of guilt. And what I want to say about that is the way I've gotten through it, because I remember reading that and thinking, I got four kids. This isn't happening. I don't have 20 minutes per child every single – it just wasn't happening, and it was stressing me out and making me throw my hands up in the air with the whole idea.
Yeah.
And instead I realized that I could sprinkle little – tiny bits of quality time all throughout the day by doing some of the things that we already talked about. Just when they come up to me, instead of brushing them off, I drop everything, look down at them, and that's, what is that, 1 minute?
Yes.
But it's still quality time that I'm completely into them and want to hear what they have to say. Or when they get in a fight, you know, empathy, like dropping everything instead of just like, go away from me, this is terrible, I don't want to hear about your fight, but just, okay, guys, I know that hurt your feelings. Because, I mean, they are injured when they're in a fight with each other. They come to you. They are mad. They want you to listen and to be with them during that time. So just being there, listening, validating their feelings, empathy, you know, and then at the end of the day, reading with them. It's just small little bits of things all throughout the day is how I've, you know, and I try to set aside too, you know, sometimes. But it just doesn't always happen that way. And a lot of times it's just, you know, little bits throughout the day where I do drop everything and go shoot five hoops with Grant or something like that.
Exactly. And it's quality time. It's not quantity time. And so it's a matter of what you're doing with the time that you are spending with them. There's an awesome, one of my favorite resources, The Power of Moms, and I know you love that as well. There's a podcast called The Most Important 9 Minutes of the Day. Mm-hmm. And it talks about how the first 3 minutes after they wake up, the first 3 minutes after they get home from school, and then the 3 minutes before they go to bed are those times where if you are so deliberate with them as they start their day, as they come home, and as you send them off to sleep at night, having great intention with the amount of focus and care and love you show your child during those 3 minutes, how that can just like magnify their whole life and just like fill their tank so strongly. If nothing, if you have no other time during the day, those 9 minutes cumulative.
It's a very, it's an encouraging thought. It's just, you know, gives you a goal and something that you can work towards.
Yeah.
But Jessica, I was telling you the other day that Evelyn, in the past with all of the kids, I could set aside, well, I can't do this right now, you know, give me 5 minutes and then we'll go do this together. And that was just fine. But now as Evelyn's entering, you know, as she's getting older and older, she'll say, Mom, I want to show you the Studio C on my, you know, tablet. And if I were to say to her, I can't right now, give me 5 minutes, I'll be in your room, it's over. She doesn't care. In 5 minutes, if I come back to her room, she's like, it's okay. And she's not trying to be mean, but it's over, you know? And so I realized, wow, oh my gosh, I got to kind of be into it and excited. Right. She wants to show me this. And I need to be excited or else she's over the idea.
Right.
And that's hard for me to, it's different.
It is. And there's probably very few things in your life that you literally can't stop right that moment and pick up, you know, if you stop for the 5 minutes to give her that quality time and then you resumed your dishes or you resumed your emails or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I mean, what's really life or death that you can't stop and
But you almost need to create some sort of mantra for yourself because I'm a little OCD. So if I'm in the middle of unpacking lunches, I want to get them unpacked. You know, if I'm in the middle of something, so I need to, when those moments happen, I need to say something in my head to just snap out of it. Like, not as important as your child or something like that.
I am here. I am present. Yes. Yeah. No, absolutely. I like that idea. It can be really hard, but in some of these things, it's not going to come naturally at first to give love in a way that is more foreign to you, if it's not your love language, it might be hard at first. You might have to be really deliberate about it, but then eventually it will become more habitual. But having a mantra like that could definitely get you in the right habit of stopping what you're doing.
And one little caveat to that, I don't think that for the little kids, I think that they are okay. Usually, you know, if they want to play basketball with you, okay, give me 5 minutes, buddy. But like I said, this is a new concept where as they get older, they're not asking for a lot of my time anymore.
Right.
I mean, she doesn't need me all the time like my little kids do.
Right.
And so those few times that she does, so I don't want a mom to feel guilty because she's not always dropping everything, at every moment in time. But for the older kids, they don't need you as much. She goes to disappears in her room, and does her own thing for most of the day.
Right.
And I have to beg her to be with me a lot of times.
Spend time with me. I need my quality time again. Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, like my five, almost six-year-old, if I say, okay, mom's busy, 5 minutes, he's cool with that. That's
right.
That's no skin off his nose. He's totally fine. And I know it does not affect his, oh, does mom love me or does she want to spend time? That doesn't affect him at all. I can tell. And it's fine.
Well, especially if you follow through on your word and he believes you.
Oh, but when you ignore them and they've asked for another bowl of cereal 17 times and you haven't followed through yet, that's when they start to call you on it. And that's fair.
Right.
That's fair. One thing that's really helped me, for any listeners that may have new babies in the family, one thing that's made a huge difference, I've heard this from a lot of my friends who've introduced a new child into the family and guaranteed as soon as you sit down to feed the baby, your kids need you. Your older kids, they need you right that second. Or as soon as you get on the phone, your kids need you right that second. They need, they're just in your face. They need you. And so what I've learned is I need to set them up for success because they're going to want attention the second I can't give it to them. So what I've done is if I know that I'm going to get on the phone for more than a couple minutes, or if I'm going to feed the baby or something, I say, okay, mom's going to go feed the baby. What do you need? And they might say, okay, I need another bowl of cereal. Or, oh, will you come see my Lego creation right now? Or, will you read this book with me even? I will do that. Because if I square away whatever their needs are before starting that activity, I am so much less likely to be interrupted by them. And they feel like their needs and they were a priority in my mind. And they were loved, whether or not quality time is their primary love language. It's been so huge. I am not interrupted when I feed the baby anymore because I set them up for success. I get them what they need. Hey, mom's going to go upstairs for 15 minutes to feed the baby. And when I come down, then we're going to read another book, or then we're going to go play soccer, or then we're going to shoot five hoops, whatever it is. That has revolutionized the interrupting thing. But when
that's
I don't,
really
when
good.
I just like disappear, oh, they're on me so fast. Or when I'm on the phone, if I don't set them up ahead of time, mom, it is just crazy.
No, it's a great, that is a phenomenal idea and concept. And you don't realize, oh gosh, I don't have the, 3 or 5 minutes to play ring around the rosy real quick. But if you just do that and then get to your tasks, you'll have so much more time.
You are going to be dealing with that child for more than 3 to 5 minutes, like correcting the situation that ensues as they're trying to interrupt you. It is way better to be proactive and put that time at the forefront of whatever time you need than to deal with the mayhem in the middle. You are saving yourself time and saving yourself craziness.
Frustration.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And so, I learned that from Amy McCready. She does Positing Parenting Solutions. And that was one of
that's the book I was talking about.
Oh,
with the mining or something. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. So quality time is great, but it's quite a sacrifice in the time of the parent. So you have to be careful if that is your child's love language, because it can often go by the wayside just because it takes your time. It does.
Right.
So, okay. The next one is gifts. And gifts are not just the Lego set or the buying their love that you might think. It's symbols of love. And you have to be careful because some people just like people want to, cop out of the quality time. They cop in with the gifts. Like, okay, if I just, I work really long hours, I'm just going to buy you this thing to make you happy or feel loved. For some children, gifts is their love language. Tell me more about your experience with that, because I know that
that everyone is kind of like that.
I think that, like you said, you do have to be careful, and obviously you don't want to spoil your children, but I think that it's really exciting for me if my children have been talking about something for a long time, and I don't give them a lot of money for allowance. They basically get nothing. And so I, here and there, if they've been talking about something, or I know that something is really exciting to them, for instance, Evelyn has just started texting just within our family, but she loves emojis. And so I know that's kind of kooky, but she does. And so I saw these little emoji pillows at Target or something, and they were just so cute. And I knew that that was going to make her extremely excited and feel my love. So I put them on her bed. She comes home, and it is. It's really fun. You know, you don't want to spoil the kids, but when you know that there's been something on their mind, something that they would love, I think it's a really neat way of showing your love for them. And also within the siblings, we... You know how festive I like to be around holidays. And so for Christmas and for Valentine's Day, we usually do a secret Santa or a secret Valentine exchange. And I just have the kids, they each have a little stack of hearts, like for Valentine's Day coming up. And they have to write a little note. And then I give them their own little stash of the things I've gotten at the dollar store. So they get to distribute to their siblings these little gifts.
I love that.
And it is... I mean, the love is abounds in our home during that week because they love getting little gifts from each other. I think it's really neat to spread that to the children, giving to the siblings, because then they are feeling that kind of love. And most kids do like gifts, and most kids do, not all kids, but a lot of kids feel some love when they get a little gift.
Absolutely. And some of the things, like we've been trying to pare down and get rid of stuff in our house because it just feels like we've just accumulated like a hoarder. And as I'm trying, okay, do we really need all these stuffed animals? Da, da, da. And my kids will go, well, that one's from so-and-so, and that one's from the fair, and that one's from this and that. Like, they have an emotional attachment. I mean, I'm sure this is borderline unhealthy, but, you know, like, now that I'm thinking more about this, maybe this is a bad thing. But, I mean, it just, that communicated love from their papa, that communicated love from so-and-so, because they just connect it with that person. And I think especially when they're young... Next one and last one is service. And service is motivated by doing what's best for someone else. And in the book, they pointed out when we model service, they learn to serve others. And so it's really important that we are doing this ourselves so that they're seeing it and then they're able to put it into practice. And I mean, if you're trying to figure out what your child's love language is, often it is how they express love to other people. So you can say, you know, how do you know daddy loves you, or how do you know mommy loves you? And they can communicate back, and that can kind of clue you in. But then the other thing is you can be watching for what are they doing to show love to other people. And if they're serving other people, or if they're giving gifts to other people or affirming them or whatever, that is a clue that that might be their love language as well. And like I mentioned before, for me, service is one of those things. I'm constantly looking for opportunities to serve because it shows my love to them. And I want to teach my kids that regardless of whether that's their love language or not. And
it's just, it's a good thing to keep in mind. I had a teacher one day, she was going through some things with her child, and she wrote me a quick text. Do you have any ideas? My daughter's love language is service, and this is before I'd even read the book. But I started researching into it. What are some things that parents can do? And I just found it fascinating because, you know, we're always, service is what we do. I mean, we're moms. Yeah, that's all day long.
All day long.
But just doing the little extra step and going a little bit above and beyond, something as simple as asking them, what do you want for dinner? Let's make pancakes for dinner. You know, just fun things like that. It just makes, it's just such a loving feeling to do these acts of service with them. Helping them if they have their chores. I thought this was a neat idea.
Yes.
Help them with a chore. That is a huge act of service that they are so grateful for if that's their primary love language.
Yes, so. And serving your children is not about enabling your children or taking away their responsibilities and making them more dependent upon you, because that doesn't teach them, you know, any kind of self-sufficiency. It's about showing love by going, like you said, going above and beyond. My son Parker is almost 6. He can put on his shoes and socks. Like, that is something he is capable of doing. But for some reason, he always asks me to do it. And I get so frustrated. I'm like, you know how to do it. You can put on your own shoes and socks. But as after I read this book, I realized he wants that service from me. He knows how to put on his shoes and socks, but he's testing me to see, is mom willing to show love in this way by helping me do something that I could do, but is she willing to go that extra mile? And so once I reframed it in my mind like that, I thought, well, I'm going to do it every now and again, or I'm going to offer to do it. And he loves it. And it's so silly, but it means a lot to them. So you have to figure out what means a lot to them. Yeah, it's a hard line between helping your child too much and wanting them to be independent, but then also supporting them and giving them the support and resources they need to be successful. There's a difference, you know, and you have to decide how that's going to go with your individual children. As soon as we identify our child's love language, we can begin to fill their love tank. And when their love tank is full, they're going to be much more receptive to discipline and guidance. And that's what we want. We don't want children that push back every time we try and give them some feedback or some correction or some criticism. We don't want rebellious children that feel like mom or dad is criticizing them every time they correct them. We want them to feel loved and safe with us so that when we do need to correct them, we are able to do so in a loving way, and they're going to be much more receptive. When kids are infants, we are in control, and our goal is to move them towards being self-disciplined and self-sufficient. And we want to communicate to them we're looking out for their best interests. So as we discipline, we want it to be communicated in a positive way instead of a negative one. And that is possible if we first fill their love tank. Just to kind of wrap up, I want to focus on when your child is misbehaving, because I think that's a huge thing that I think parents are going to want to have a takeaway from. If a child is throwing a tantrum or pushing back or whatever, you can ask yourself, is my child feeling loved or are they needing something? If either of those questions, something comes to your mind, respond to that. If they're needing food, and that's why they're melting down, feed them. If they're not feeling loved, you know, find a way to insert a love connection right then and there, so that you can kind of diffuse the situation and then deal with it from there. Sometimes that's all it takes to correct the misbehavior, and then you don't have to resort to real punishment. And they give a lot more information in the book about misbehavior, but
I liked that chapter. Yeah, go on, sorry.
But the point is that we need to love them before and after the punishment. If we've filled up their love tank before, if they end up having to have a punishment or a consequence, it's going to be received a lot better. And then follow up after something goes awry and they ended up, you know, losing a privilege or they have to have some time away or whatever it is that you feel is appropriate for your child, follow up and say, do you know why you had to have that toy taken from you? Do you know why you had to have some time away from your friends? And say, I love you, I want the best for you, but I need you to learn this idea that when you hit a friend, you don't get to play with your friends. You know, things like that.
Exactly.
You don't have to yell at them. You don't have to be physical with them. You can communicate very strong discipline without enlisting fear or making them feel insecure about where they stand with you.
Well, and when they're feeling fear, they're not learning. And, you know, there's many books written on this. You know, fear shuts down the brain. When they feel angry, their brain is shut down. When you can communicate in a really respectful, firm, and try to use as few words as possible kind of a thing, you know, this happened because of it. They don't need a long lecture,
no.
But it just needs to be very respectful and neutral. And there I was going to inject on the proactive side, what you were saying with filling the love tank, or as you see the meltdown beginning, or you know, it's just starting off. One thing when I was in school in my master's program, they kind of talked to us about being a counselor. Gosh, that's really scary, right? I mean, and you're listening, and what are you supposed to offer up these life-changing philosophies to these clients who need help? But they said, you know, if you had only one tool in your toolbox, and this was the only thing you had going for you, you would be successful as a psychologist. And they also said that it's similar for a parent. If this is the only tool you have in your toolbox,
what is it?
I
need this tool. Yes.
Is the tool of empathy. And I have used that so if you're reflecting back to a client, look, it sounds like you're, this is empathy. You're just saying, it sounds like you're feeling really, really sad. It sounds like this has been really difficult for you. And that's all you said. They would at least feel understood. Like yeah. you're reflecting back the things that are being said to you. And with kids, when I see that Anna's about to have a meltdown because she doesn't want to wear this dress, you know, your instinct is to be, oh, come on, this is ridiculous. Of course you're going to, you know, you're just, come on, get in the car right now. But if I just get down on her level at the very beginning and kind of fill her love tank by saying, Anna, I know you don't want to wear this dress. I know you're sad about this. And that's it. And I just kind of validate her feelings right. first and foremost so that yes. she knows that I know. Like, she's trying to tell you, Mom, I don't want this. And if you're ignoring that, then that's going to just, it's going to keep going. But if you just were to take it down a notch and just say, look, I know you don't want to wear this dress. I know you don't like this dress. I understand that, honey. How about if, and then offer a solution. It's huge. I'm telling you, it almost always gives a measure of success to your little interaction there.
Yes. And it's a time saver. We might feel like, oh, we don't have time to reason with them, or we don't have time to be compassionate. We do, because compassion and empathy, a lot of times it takes a lot less time than unraveling
the
into
monster.
A tantrum. Yes. And talking down the monster. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
And it's just so simple. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know you're really sad. I know this means a lot to you. It means so much to them that you would get it, you know?
And I'm sure that would shock a lot of parents that, you know, deal with tantrums on a daily basis. Like, that's all I need to say. Yeah, right. That would never work for my kid. But it is so true. I've seen the same thing in my house. Exactly. Exactly.
Well, it's a good first step, you know, and it doesn't, you know, then you have to kind of think of a resolution, but it's a good step.
Yeah. No, I think it's just so powerful to reflect upon our relationships with our kids and realize that every child is very different and you can't parent any two children the same way, which makes our job especially difficult, but also especially rewarding. When you figure out what makes them tick, when you figure out, you know, how they feel loved, and when they respond back with love because they feel full, wow, what an amazing feeling. And you
it's like you're solving a mystery, and it is very stimulating to figure out all the details, and it's exciting. Yeah,
it is. And it just brings such joy to motherhood. And you realize, like, they're constantly changing, and so you're going to constantly be adapting, and you're never done learning your children. But I just love that about motherhood, that it can just be so rewarding. And oftentimes in the midst of the busyness, you don't get much feedback. But if you're looking for it, you can see them, their eyes sparkle when you do something that you know means a lot to them. And I just think that's the best. So if you are interested in finding out more about the five love languages, I got mine from the library. They definitely have it on Amazon. I'm going to put the link in the show notes. You can pick that up. It's an awesome book, a really easy read, especially if you don't have a lot of time. The page at the end of each chapter is a great go-to, and it applies to both children and all relationships in your life. You can pull these principles. So, this has been fun chatting about this, Steph. Thanks for your insights.
Thank you for having me. It was wonderful to chat about it. And also, I was going to put the little plug in about, like you said, the marriage. It's really interesting to find out your spouse's love language, too. And it makes a world of difference once you figure that out.
Yeah.
And then hone in on that instead of wasting your time and energy making them a gourmet meal and realizing, wait a second, they would much more prefer just you to run up and give them this big hug and kiss at the end of the day.
Exactly, exactly.
So it's really interesting to read the adult version as well.
Yes, I totally agree. So on that note, happy Valentine's Day to everybody. And I hope we can just love our kids a little more and love our spouse a little more and just be more in tune with what they really need to have their love tank filled by us, because that's the goal, to have a happy home and happy, loved children. So thanks a lot, Steph, and we'll continue doing book clubs in the future on the Extraordinary Moms podcast, and hopefully you had a lot of takeaways from this, and now you can feel like you read a book. So bye, Steph, and everybody else.
Thank you.
A great day. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Stephanie. Isn't she so fun? I'm so glad I have a friend that I can talk to about motherhood stuff, because we are not in this alone, and other moms are our best resources for finding out, what do you do when your child does such and such, or have you read a book about this, or, you know, things like that. Other moms should be our go-tos, because we all have such common experiences, even if our families and our kids look a lot different. So it's great to have that go-to. So, Steph, thanks for being mine. As always, you can visit extraordinarymomspodcast.com, and on this episode's post, you can find information in the show notes, links to the books, and the article on Power of Moms that I mentioned, the best 9 minutes, most important 9 minutes. I'll get the title right by the time I write the show notes. You can also follow me on Instagram at JessicaDahlquist3. That way you can always find out when a new episode comes about. And this week for Friday Favorites, I'm going to do a little tutorial on how to listen to podcasts. And I got a lot of feedback from people that aren't really sure how to listen to a podcast. So if you are just going to the website for now and listening straight on the site, that's great. But it is super easy to listen from a mobile device. So this Friday, I will do an audio post of the tutorial for how to listen to a podcast. And then I'll include some of the favorites that people chimed in with in terms of our Mom Talk Monday. And you had some great ideas, some that I've listened to, some that I haven't. So I'll put that on the show on Friday as well. I hope everyone has a great rest of your week, and I will talk to you on Friday. Thanks.